This is a Defocus Media production. What's up, everyone? It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Lyerly, resident optometry nerd.
And welcome to Defocus Media, optometry's number one podcast, where we discuss the hottest topics, latest technology, eyewear, practice management, and more. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
Welcome to the Defocus Media Podcast. I'm Dr. Jennifer Lyerly, and today we are asking and answering all of your important questions about healthcare real estate, because many optometrists have known nothing, basically, when it comes to their leases, their locations, should they rent, should they own. I'm speaking for myself because I realize how little I know about this, and working in private practice now, this is essential to your business success. So we brought in an expert. Please welcome to the show, Colin Carr.
It's a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate it.
Colin, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into healthcare real estate, because it's a very specific niche.
Yeah, so I grew up in Michigan, and I took a little bit of an unusual career path. I did not go to college, started working as a property manager managing apartment complexes at the age of 19, and went a little bit different route. Could have gone to college, had the ability to. I just didn't have a clear focus as far as what I wanted to be when I grew up. So just started working for a gentleman that owned a bunch of apartment complexes, and he took me underneath his wings and started mentoring me. And so I did that back in Michigan for a few years, moved to Denver, Colorado in 2001, and kept managing apartment complexes, mostly, you know, mid-rise and high-rise stuff near the downtown Denver market. And then I got my broker's license when I was 23. And started working for a group that did Walmarts, Wendy's, Blockbusters, large national retailers, and that was how I got into brokerage. And then the long story short is, over a period of several years, I just kept finding healthcare providers that needed help, and I thoroughly enjoyed helping them. It was a stark contrast between working for a large national retailer. And you were just kind of a number. You were one of dozens of deals they do per year. And if you did a phenomenal job, they may maybe notice. If you did a terrible job, they maybe notice. But it was really lacked that personal touch. And I started working for healthcare providers, and it was making a very substantial impact in their life, in their finances, in their practice. And I just started going after it more and more. And then we launched our company in 2009, and it just took off from there.
How do you grow a company with this kind of specialty and focus? Is it word of mouth, or how are you spreading the information?
Yeah, it is. And you know, we're niched. I mean, you look at real estate, commercial real estate is one niche, first of all. And then you get into the fact that we only do healthcare. So that's the second niche. And then inside that, we only represent tenants and buyers. So we don't have a sign in front of any building. Nobody can just drive by a building and see our name and call us. And that's what 98% of commercial real estate brokers do, is they put a sign in front of a building and they rely upon those signs to help market for them. We don't have any signs out there. So it's 100% word of mouth. And, you know, we operate the same way that you do as a practitioner. I mean, you hang your hat on every patient that you see, on your integrity, on the way that you take care of your patients. And we do the same thing. It's, if we do a phenomenal job for our clients, if we, you know, put their interests first, if we protect them, if we help them save, you know, tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars, whatever the situation might be, then they tell their colleagues and peers. And that's how we've grown it. So, you know, we started in Colorado, in Denver, and then that grew to the rest of the state. And then in 2015, we launched and went national. And now we're in 35 states, and we represent a couple of thousand healthcare providers per year, and are having a blast taking care of people.
Well, I know, you know, you've served hundreds of optometrists at this point, and so you know a lot about our profession and what we're looking for when it comes to a real estate location. So let's break down some of the key specifics that a doctor or someone that's helping them find a spot should be aware of, to know to look for when it comes to the right place to put your business.
Absolutely. So typically we like to ask, you know, practitioners, do you have a desire for being either in an office property where you've got maybe nicer window lines, maybe you've got other healthcare providers in the building, or do you want to be in a retail storefront where you have maybe a larger sign, people pull up to the front of your building, park, walk right in? Usually people have a bent or a desire for one or the other, but what we tell them is you should really look at all your options. And it's easy to say, well, I've seen so-and-so's practice and that's what it looks like, and so that's what I want too. But what we recommend is, you know, you find the geographic area that you're most interested in, and then your advisor should go to the market and find all the options that meet your criteria. And that should be both for lease options and for purchase. It should be retail and for office. And then when you go look at the market, you should look at your top options. Whether that's 5 or 8 options, you don't need to look at 20. That's what your advisor should do. They should narrow down the options for you. But you know, sometimes you know, you're thinking, I want to be in, you know, this retail storefront, but it could be that there's an office building that has tremendous signage as well that you weren't aware of, or maybe there's a chance to purchase that you weren't considering that, and economically or financially that makes way more sense for you. So our recommendation is, when you go to the market, look at all your options. Don't put yourself in a box before you get there. And then once you see the top 5, 6, 7, 8 options, again, depends on the market. If you're in Orange County, you might, you know, see one option. If you're downtown Manhattan and you want to be in a certain block, you might have one option. But if you're in, you know, Raleigh where you are, you might have 8 or 10. So, you know, that's kind of a foundation, I'd say that. And then certainly you get into concepts, you know, parking, signage, synergy of other tenants, economics are going to drive every deal. You know, there's almost always going to be a property that maybe just doesn't make sense financially, but you love it. It's kind of like a house. There's always a more expensive house or property that you could get if you wanted to pay for it. But yeah, that's a good starting point.
And I know obviously every situation is different, but do you tend to recommend, especially for someone who's a new start, they don't have a big patient base they're bringing with them. They're kind of cold starting a practice, if you will. Do you recommend looking at more of an established office space or retail space, or going to more like an independent business area where you don't really know what the growth is going to be like there?
Yeah, I think, you know, we usually start with asking that question to the doctor, you know, where do you live? Where do you want to practice? Is there any area that's really exciting to you? And then you can get into the concepts like, you know, what's the competition? If it's an established area, how many providers are in that immediate area? And it's not enough just to, you know, look at a Google map and say, you know, here's 4 providers. You need to go one step further and say, what's the quality of their office space? Is it a space that's been there for 35 years and they've never updated it? And they're not proactive with technology. It's not going to attract the same patient base. Maybe, you know, you're going after a younger patient base, or, you know, you have a fresher model. And so it depends on who's the competition, what are they doing? And then obviously you get into the numbers of how many providers per population, and you get into demographics, and that's highly advisable as well to make sure it's the right choice. And then conversely, I mean, you know, I'm in Denver, Colorado, and I live in a specific suburb that has just exceptional growth. And I mean, there's an area down the street from my house right now where there's over 3,000 dwelling units, or, you know, units going in between houses, condos, apartments, 3,000 that are going in right now within a 1.5-mile radius, new grocery store, all these new retailers. And so that's a scenario where, you know the population's coming. It comes up to a certain area, you know the population's coming. And so if you have a chance to get in into an area like that prior to somebody else, and you have the ability to, you know, to plant your flag before anyone else does, that can be highly desirable as well.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing a lot in that in our area where, you know, new grocery store, and then these centers are very smart. They'll put in a grocery store, apartment buildings right by it, and then the store is on the underside. And it seems like, oh my gosh, this is an ideal location because everyone's always going to be grocery shopping. So they're going to be walking by you all the time. And people literally live right where your office is. So what would be easier for them to walk down a floor and get into the optometry office? So
absolutely.
I'm thrilled to see that sort of retail space does make good sense from what you're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, you got to look at all your options, but retail can be highly desirable. If you find yourself with a beautiful storefront, with a nice sign in front, and then you pick up the synergy of other successful retailers, being, you know, again, a grocery store is the anchor potentially. You get a coffee with a drive-through, you get the traditional co-tenants, like you get the nail salon, you get the hair salon, you get the dry cleaner, and you get the couple restaurants, the fast food users. And what that does is it's a built-in ideally several hundred or even a couple thousand people per day that have the ability to see you. And then when you couple that exposure with the marketing you do, whether it's digital, whether it's print, whether it's, you know, however you're doing it, it's that top of mind awareness of, you know, I know where they're located because I go there once a week, or no, I've actually seen that group now. Yeah, that it connects the dots for them. So yeah, you know, retail, you know, high exposure, nice signage, it can be very desirable.
Is there anything that you tell your clients to actively avoid when they're looking at a potential spot or location? That's always a bad sign to you.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot more controversial uses today than there were maybe a few decades ago. And so it's really important just to make sure that the synergy of the neighboring tenants is going to be compatible with you. And so, I mean, there's some uses that are more controversial than others. And I mean, you get, and again, I'm not trying to, you know, if this is someone who's listening's favorite store, that's fine. But, you know, you can get, you know, the vapor cigarette stores, you can get, you know, some of the medical marijuana stores, or the marijuana stores, you know, aren't done the best. Sometimes a liquor store, they just plaster the windows with all the posters and signs, and it might detract from the look you're going for. So it's important to find, you know, a quality center that, if they are going to lease to those uses, are going to have restrictions. They can't have, you know, 17 neon lights advertising, you know, vapor cigarettes in the storefront. And you find, you know, we've had that issue before, you know, where they drop in a check cash, or they drop in these uses that, you know, again, the public needs these uses and they serve the public. But it might not be the tenant that you're the most excited about being next to, if you will. So if you can limit certain uses next to you, or at least, you know, have some standards that they have to maintain a certain storefront, then you're going to be in much better shape.
I greatly respect that. I just, as you were speaking, I remember, so the very first practice that I worked in, it was at a much older shopping center, and rent was very affordable. It was very low. So, I mean, it was a great bustling location. But our nearby tenants were a vape shop, and we had a lot of issues with patients or with staff. And we were like, there's like dirty diapers all in the parking lot. Like, there's just always something going on. The fire alarm would go off once a week, and we'd have to like all go outside while the patients are dilating and check dilations on the sidewalk, you know? So now I realize maybe the vape shop should have tipped me off.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I can think of a client right now that we helped, you know, very large, successful, you know, 4 or 5 doctor practice. And, you know, they dropped in just a really low end vapor shop next door, cause they'd pay the rent. And so we had to deal with that. And, you know, we've had other times where, you know, nice, you know, what would normally be, I guess, more of an upscale, you know, wine liquor store, all of a sudden, you know, really downgrades their image. And then they just start postering the windows with all the different signs. And it can really hurt you. You know, we've had times before where a Subway drops in next to you, and you know, they're baking bread, you know, all day long. And I mean, you would think that your space was a Subway, because that, it just, they didn't seal the wall properly on their side. They don't care. It's the principle of the strongest smell. If their smell's stronger, they don't care, because you don't bother them. But you know, so you just got to pay attention to, if you're going into a retail center, you got to pay attention to who the neighboring tenants are, who they are now, who they could be in the future. If you're going into an office building, that's usually less of a concern. But you still do want to pay attention. And again, that's the point of having, you know, people that do this professionally for a living, that can watch out for your interests, because you're certainly going to be aware of certain things that are more obvious to you, but there's probably going to be quite a few concepts that escape your understanding as well.
Oh, thank goodness you're looking out for everyone to make sure we pick up on some major disasters that could be taking place.
Yeah, I mean, there's no perfect space. There's no perfect deal. There's always something random there. So we always try to set an appropriate expectation of, listen, you know, real estate is like anything else. There's better options than others. There's usually no perfect option, and it is a moving concept. And there's always some issue. There's maintenance issues. There's neighboring issues. There's landlord issues. Even when you own a property, you have issues you have to deal with on a regular basis. So, you know, we try to do the best we can to eliminate as many of the unknowns as possible, and then just prepare people. There's going to be some challenges you face. That's your practice. That's what you deal with employees and staff, with patients. You know, that's what you deal with life. So just you try to do the best you can with what you have.
Well, that's a great segue, because I think a major question that many docs have is, should I be working towards owning my own location, or is renting long-term something that's totally appropriate? And I mean, when we think about right now, I'm in a situation where we are renting. These lease agreements come up and suddenly it costs so much more to have that exact same place. And you get in that constant battle, like, do I keep renting here? Do I need to go to my own place and now own my own place? So how do you make that decision on what's right?
So the question of whether you should own or whether you should lease comes up for almost every provider. There are some consulting groups out there that are very anti one or the other. They're anti-owning. They'll tell you never to own, and they've got their specific reasons. There's other people that tell you have to own. You should never rent, and they'll say you're wasting money. It's really not a one size fits all. And so I'll go through some of the pros of each. You know, if you're leasing and you're doing a startup, or you're maybe doing a second or third office, landlords cut large checks for quality tenants, and so that's typically in the form of a tenant improvement allowance or a tenant build-out allowance. They usually also give you the free rent during the build-out, and then it's very customary to get free rent once you open as well. So you might sign a lease, have, you know, 6 months for build-out, and may have another 4 to 6 months free once you open. That's a very legitimate financial concession. Additionally, they might give you a tenant improvement allowance of $30 a foot or 40 or 50 or more. And so that's money that you're not borrowing, that you're not paying interest on. So, that also gives you potentially a little bit more flexibility early on to get a practice up and running, where you might only need 1800 or 2000 square feet in the beginning. And then long-term you want to bring on an associate or partner, and then you want to move into a larger space. So, I think it depends on what stage of your career you're in. And it depends on if you're very certain that this is the area that you want to be in for the long haul. But really what it comes down to is it comes down to the economics. And so with the caveat of you have to like it. So, I mean, you got to like the option. Sometimes there's an option to lease. It's in a beautiful center. It's got the exposure. It's got the neighboring tenants. And then there's an option to purchase, but it's in an inferior location. It's harder to get to. It's not as nice. And so, you know, sure, you might pay down principal and get the benefits of ownership there. But if it means your practice produces, you know, $20,000 per month less in revenue because it's an inferior location, you got to weigh that. Is the couple thousand dollars per month benefit of owning worth losing $20,000 in revenue and having a practice that's worth less? So, I know I'm hitting a couple topics here, but you got to like the product first of all, and you got to see yourself wanting to be there, you know, for at least 10 years or more. It's not like residential where you just flip a house every few years. You got to realize if you're buying commercial real estate, you're creating a niche as far as who could come behind you. And if you want the highest return, it's got to be sold to the same thing, the same use that you have. Mm-hmm. And so if you're looking to retire or transition, great. But if you think you're going to want to move in 5 or 10 years, you probably don't want to own because you're going to backfill your space with a competitor, or you're going to lose a ton of money. So when it comes to the economics, though, I'll give you three quick concepts that make a big difference. It's not just running a mortgage calculator and looking at the payment. You look at it first and foremost of what does it cost to own per month? Like, what's the check that I'm going to cut to own? And then you compare that to what it costs to lease. And you've got to factor in the tenant improvement allowance. You got to factor in the free rent. You got to factor in all the concessions of leasing so that you have a true apples to apples comparison. So first thing is, what am I cutting a check for to own versus what does it cost to lease? Then you got to factor in the tax deductions because you get to depreciate the asset, the real estate, if you own it. And so there's pros on both sides of tax deductions of leasing and owning. And so you've got to filter the tax deductions. That becomes the next scenario. You might have an ownership situation where it costs maybe $3,000 a month more to own than it does to lease, but you're picking up so many tax deductions that it could be net neutral or even after you figure out you're going to pay less in taxes monthly or quarterly. Mm-hmm. And so it's same thing with home ownership. You might be able to rent for $1,500 a month. You own for $2,500, but you look at the principal pay down and the tax deductions and the appreciation, all of a sudden the ownership beats the leasing or renting, even if it's more, if it costs more. And so, and then the third area you look at is the principal pay down. Every month you cut a check for the mortgage, you know, you're paying down, you know, $1,000, $2,000, $4,000, depending on the mortgage. And basically what that means is your balance sheet's going up every month by that amount. Your personal net worth is increasing every month by, you know, thousands of dollars per month. And that's really compelling. So, you know, if the chance to own is $15,000 a month, the chance to lease is $5,000 a month, and they're going to give you $150,000 to build out the space for lease and give you flexibility, then the benefits of ownership might not be there. If it's apples to apples after those different equations, ownership's a phenomenal opportunity to diversify, build an additional asset base, and then eventually, you know, have that additional sale that a lot of times can be worth more in the practice.
Makes perfect sense. I mean, let's talk a little bit about how to make, if you are leasing, which most new doctors that are starting a practice cold are probably looking more at the avenue because of the pricing differences. How do you make sure that you're getting a lease that is affordable and then, you know, you've made it the best you possibly can financially?
Yep. So without sounding like I'm a broken record, the key is you've got to look at multiple options. And then the next aspect is you've got to negotiate with multiple landlords. That's the key. And so the contrast here compared to residential is very stark. In residential, you look at properties, whether you go out with an agent or you look online at the different online sites, but you basically do your window shopping, you figure it out. And then when you find a house you like, you typically submit an actual contract that's a binding contract. When the other party signs it, you're under contract. And so you don't submit multiple offers, you submit one offer. In commercial real estate, you typically negotiate on a non-binding basis in what's called a letter of intent. And it is custom to negotiate with three or four landlords simultaneously. And so the game plan is you go to the market and you look at your top, again, maybe five options, eight options, depends on the market you're in. And then you submit offers at three or four properties simultaneously. And then when those landlords understand that you're not just working on one property, you're working on three or four properties, they realize that they have to be more competitive, because if they put together an inferior offer, it's going to be too stark of a contrast, and it's going to come in too weak compared to the other offers, and they're going to have a very low chance of making that deal. So the ideal scenario is that you hire expert representation. They take dozens of hours of their valuable time, plus their market knowledge and all the deals they've done in the past. They leverage that in the due diligence and the research for you. They set up a time to tour with you that maybe takes an hour and a half, 2 hours tops. You see your top, you know, 5 to 8 options that are all pre-qualified, that they know what's good, what's bad. They're not going to show you anything that doesn't make sense that you wouldn't want to go into. And then they negotiate on three or four properties for you simultaneously. And then you might go three or four rounds each. And then here's the beauty of this. By the time you get to best and final terms on three or four properties and you've got them side by side in a comparison spreadsheet, you're going to know for a fact that you didn't leave money on the table, that you didn't miss seeing a property that would have been more suitable for your practice in your future. And you're not going to wonder, is this a good or a bad deal? That's how you prove, and that's how you get that peace of mind is, people that go after one property, they always have in the back of their mind, I wonder if I did the best job. I wonder if I pushed hard enough. I wonder if I would have asked for this, they would have said yes. You eliminate all that confusion and all that uncertainty when you have a strategic game plan, and that's how you capitalize.
That is incredibly smart, and I've never heard anyone do that. So incredible, and obviously something that a single optometrist is probably not taking on by themselves. So definitely need to call an expert on doing something like that.
Well, and that also plays into, I mean, in commercial real estate, tenants don't pay their brokers, all right? People say, you know, what if I want to do it myself? You can do it yourself, but you're not going to save money because you're not doing a for sale by owner where you decide not to pay a commission. If you're a tenant or a buyer, the landlord decides what the commission is, and they've already agreed to a commission with their listing agent, and that commission's built for two people. So if you decide to do the do-it-yourself approach where you go do it, you know, without an agent, all you're doing is giving the listing agent a double commission, and yet you don't get any benefit for it. You waste your time, you get inferior terms. And so people then will say, all right, well, if you're going to get paid by the landlord, how do I know that you're working in my best interests? And so that's answered with what I just said is you're not going to move forward unless you're 100% satisfied that the terms meet your criteria, and you're going to know 100% that you got the best deal possible. Because if you're not satisfied, you just keep saying, let's go back. And eventually the landlord's going to say, hey, we're done. And you're going to know, hey, you know, we scraped the bottom of the barrel on this deal. But that creates a check and balance to where you as the doctor, you as the tenant or buyer, you're the one who's in control. And that creates a check and balance. Now, on top of that, the person you're working with is going to operate integrity just like you would as a doctor. You're not going to overprescribe or wrongly prescribe to make extra money. Some people might do that. Unfortunately, that's not your ideal person, and they're going to lose business that way. Same thing in real estate. If people cut corners, it's too small of a market. People figure that out. But the best scenario is you as the doctor in control, you know what your options are. And then when it comes time to make that final decision, if you're not satisfied, you don't move forward. If you are satisfied, you move forward. And you know, at that point, I didn't miss a property and I didn't miss getting a better deal.
Well, there's scenarios that many doctors that have practices are in where, again, lease is coming up to for a renewal of the contract. The number that they're being told is a lot more than what they were paying. How do you go about negotiating there and actually making a difference if you really want to stay in your same location?
Yeah, absolutely. So lease renewals are the number one transaction in all of commercial real estate. People don't think about that. They pay attention to the startups, to the new offices, which are usually project deals where you're swinging hammers and building out a new space. And those are exciting. But if you think about it, every time one doctor opens a new location, there's probably 20 or 30 that are renewing their leases. So lease renewals are the number one transaction in commercial real estate. And with that, it's the number one transaction where doctors leave more money on the table than any other transaction. And it's the number one transaction where they get taken advantage of. Mm. So I'll give you guys a quick game plan. Number one, you've got to start the process 12 months in advance, right? If you have a desire to buy a piece of ground, raw land, and build your own building, you've got to start that transaction 18 months in advance because it does take 12 to 18 months to build a new building, believe it or not. Residential, you might be able to build a new house in 6 or 9 months. Commercial, you can't get through the cities and the building departments that fast. There's too many issues with entitlements and review, et cetera. When it comes to commercial real estate, if you're going to do a lease renewal and either buy an existing building, move to a new lease space, or stay in your current lease space, you've got to start that process 12 months in advance, and you've got to have a strategy. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give you two scenarios right now. And I'm going to give you the scenario. The first scenario, this is what 99% of all doctors do. This is why we love to educate people, because the difference in outcome is dramatic. They wait till the lease is like a couple months from expiring. The landlord intentionally runs the clock out. So everyone has watched a sporting game before, especially in football, where they run the clock out. So the other side can't touch the ball. And that's a strategy. Landlords love to run the clock out, and they love to put you in a place where they know that you haven't done your research and you don't really have options. What that means is you're going to pay a premium at that point. Mm-hmm. So scenario number one is they wait till there's 3 months left or 1 month left. They come to you and say, hey, do you want to renew? Your lease is up. And then you're like, yeah, sure. Send me a proposal. I'll take a look at it. And what you've just communicated is, I have no idea what I'm doing. I've totally missed my window. I'm not prepared to move. Please don't hurt me. Mm-hmm. That's the scenario right there. Let me flip the script on you guys. Okay. If you were selling your house and your house was worth $500,000 and your agent said, hey, listen, it's the only house in the neighborhood, it's not worth this, but there's a couple of buyers circling, I think we could sell it for $600,000. You know, it's only worth five though. And the market corrects, it's worth four. What are you going to sell your house for?
You say, well, I'll take the six.
Yeah. Well, the landlords are going to do the same thing. If they think that you don't have a strategy to move and you don't want to move, you're going to pay a premium. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get less than concessions. All right. So you can take that scenario. That's pretty clear how it works. Another scenario is 12 months prior to your lease expiring, you hire expert representation. They go to the market, do all their due diligence. They take you out and show your top options. Even if you don't want to move, they still show you what the benchmark is supposed to be. What's the standard? What are you competing against? They then take their time and they negotiate against three or four landlords simultaneously, two, three, four rounds of negotiations. Then they call your landlord on your behalf and they say, Mr. and Mrs. Landlord, I represent Dr. So-and-so. Prior to me calling you, we've already gone to the market. We've got two options to lease, one option to purchase. They're fully negotiated. Dr. So-and-so is willing to consider a lease renewal, but it's going to be at very specific terms to make sure it's competitive to their other options. And at that point, the landlord says to themselves, shoot, I have to compete now for this deal, and I'm going to have to treat them fairly. We didn't tell the landlord, we're going to take advantage of you, we're going to hurt you. We just said, look, you're not going to take advantage and hurt the client now. And at that point, that's how you level the playing field with landlords, because if you don't, it's going to cost you an extra $100,000, $200,000. They're going to charge you an extra dollar, $2-$3 a square foot. And people say, you know, is it really that much money? The answer is yes. if you pay an extra $3 a square foot on 2,500 square feet, that's $7,500 a year times 10 years, that's $75,000. Yeah. And then if you don't get the tenant improvement allowance, there's another, you know, 30, 40, 50, 80, 100 grand you didn't get. And if you don't get the free rent, even on a lease renewal, then there's tens of thousands of dollars more. And so you start adding up the annual increases and all the other concepts, and whether that's 50 grand more you should have paid, or it's 150 or 200, then you have to filter it through what's your profitability. If you got to pay an extra $150,000 in bills because you got a bad lease, that might be $750,000 in production to break even on the mistake you made. So the short answer to that question is you need to have a strategy. And if you're going to do it intelligently, you're going to have an expert advisor that helps you with it, because they're going to help make sure you're not taken advantage of.
Well, that pitch that you just gave us, the demo of when you call the landlord and you say, hey, we've got multiple other offers we're considering. I mean, I felt like so excited, and we haven't even talked to our landlord yet, but I'm energized. Like, we're going to go in there, we're going to be prepared to negotiate right, and we're going to cut a really good deal.
Well, yeah, I mean, most landlords' definition of a market lease rate is the most they can get you to pay. And people think, like, why are they like that? I mean, again, that's business. Like, if you could call up your number one insurance provider and you could tell them, if you don't increase my reimbursement by 10%, I'm going to drop you. And if they say, you know what, we can't lose your business. Maybe you represent a large group of other optometrists, and they say, you know what, we've got to do what they're asking. You know, you'd say, yeah, I'll take the 10%. You don't really care if they lose 10%. It's not really about that. It's you're looking out for your interest. You're not trying to hurt people. You're not trying to take advantage of people. You're not trying to be ruthless, but you're trying to get the best deal you can get. And that's real estate. Mm-hmm. And the misnomer of a lot of doctors is, you know, there's probably not that much of a margin in the deal. That's crazy. There's a huge margin in the deal. The next one is, I'm sure my landlord will treat me fairly. Again, they don't care about you. I don't care if they're a patient. I don't care if they send you a Christmas card and a basket on your birthday. That's just them trying to make sure that you don't check them too hard. You've got to go into the transaction knowing this is a business transaction. I can either lose tens of thousands of dollars, or I can capture tens of thousands or more. And I'm going to treat this with the level of respect it deserves. And if you do that, you're going to succeed. And if you do that, then you're now emulating what successful companies do. That's what Starbucks does. That's what Chipotle does. That's what Charles Schwab does. Like, they're not going to take an inferior deal. They're going to have three backups, and they'll move across the street if they have to. And you've got to have the same approach.
Well, I just want to say thank you so very much for your insight on this. I know I've learned a lot, and I know everyone listening is going to have learned a lot. Would you mind sharing how people can get in touch with you to learn even more?
Yeah, absolutely. So our website is carr.us, and that's carr.us. If you go there, we have a tremendous amount of resources. We have, you know, dozens of articles and blogs that are educational based. We've got a real estate glossary. We've got FAQs that are very common for healthcare providers with their leases. And then in the upper right-hand corner of every page, we have a couple tabs. One of them is a free lease or purchase evaluation. And if you want to know how your lease compares to the market, or what a purchase would look like in comparison to your current lease, we'll give you all that information. We'll spend a couple hours doing the due diligence and research. We provide that free of charge because we believe in educating healthcare providers so that they can make the best decision possible. And so whether you've got 1 year left or 7 years left, you just want to know, hey, how's my lease stack up compared to the market? We're happy to do that for you. And then the other tab at the top is find an agent. And if you want to get in touch with an expert in your market that could help, you know, walk you through your options, talk to you in detail, you can reach out to them as well.
Thank you so, so very much for your time this evening. And we appreciate all of the hard work that you've done to build this special niche, because we need it. So we're very thankful to have people like you helping out optometry as a profession.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's our pleasure. And, you know, we believe that we are moving the needle for healthcare providers at the highest level. And it's very rewarding for us, just like it's rewarding for you guys to make a difference in people's lives as their patient, and then help them, you know, go to the next level for whatever it looks like. It's the same thing for us. It's, if we can help healthcare providers be more successful, that's going to bless their staff. It's going to bless their patients. It's going to be a benefit to their community. And that's really what we're going for.
Thank you very much. And as always, guys, thank you guys for tuning in. And we'll have links to all of this on the website so you can click right over and learn more about your real estate and how your lease is stacking up. I'm about to go do that myself.
All right, colleagues, and it's a wrap. Thank you dearly for hanging out with the Defocus Media team. We hope truly something resonated with you. And if it did, be sure to give us 5 stars. And make sure you follow us on all social media platforms. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, you named it. And our handle is at Defocus Media on all platforms. And until next time, be sure to keep it 2020. And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.